Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Chinatown, way back in old Hong Kong, to get some egg foo young, and then I heard a gong. Ling ting tong, got to sing that song. I smoke a boom da ye, I smoke a boom. Ling ting tong.
It is the Savage Nation. Here's a song that cannot be made today. Pleasant, but I guarantee there's some Chinese pressure group that would try to burn the record factory down. All right, guys, thank you very much. Give them some chopsticks. We'll see him in the restaurant. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Let's see what we're going to do. I'm going to break with tradition. I am going to break with my show's tradition. I rarely, if ever, read letters from listeners, or maybe, I don't know, a few times in 10, 15 years. But today I'm going to read a long letter from a listener. And she is a seventh grader. But she has more intelligence than our, well, let's say our combined intelligence of our Senate on the Democrat side. She's certainly more intelligent than Barbara Boxer. Now, if Hillary Clinton had said what you're going to hear in this letter, she'd be the clear winner of the next election. But since she will not answer any questions, and since she had that moron, Wolf Blitzer, there eating out of her gold lame stockings, or shoes rather, I'm going to read a letter from a young lady named Ariel D. from Illinois. I'm not going to give you her last name because there are sick people in the world who will send nasty letters. My name is Ariel D. and I'm a seventh grader from Illinois. I'm inviting you and your wife to my bat mitzvah. Now, that's a confirmation for 13-year-old Jewish girls. I'm adding that in case you don't know what it is. She says, the reasons are very simple. You have taught me so many things on so many topics when I listen to your show. And here's what she says. I love it most when you tell stories about your life, childhood, food, boating, and Teddy. You're the best storyteller. I love when you yell at your worker to play some music and then yell at him that it is the wrong music. I love Teddy. He is so cute. I love his pictures on your website. They make me laugh. I also love it when you yell at idiot callers. My favorite is when one guy called and you were talking about the present-day Hitler of Iran. He said, what's wrong with Nazis and Hitler? You said, what's wrong with you? Who poisoned you, your mother or your father? Was your mother on drugs when she was pregnant with you? Me and my dad laughed so hard we had to pull over the car. The following may not seem sincere or sarcastic, but I don't want it to be. I love the fact that you taught me to use words like schmuck, moron, vermin, and moron idiot in the right context, and who to apply these labels to. I love your speech on the difference between an idiot, moron, and imbecile. I laughed so hard. My dad has been listening to your show for many years and loves it. I started listening to your show last year when my dad would drive me to and from tennis lessons, Hebrew school, and any other time I'm in the car when your show is on. I also listen to you at night when I go to sleep on a station in Wisconsin who replays your show. Michael Savage, I've learned many things from you. I've learned about nutrition, life, and the world. My dad bought your book on kids' nutrition. He has not read it yet. However, I have, and I am following many of the things you wrote in the book. Thanks very much for giving me the valuable information contained in your book. Now listen to this. New topic. Although the war in Iraq is a complicated thing for a seventh grader to understand, pay attention, Hillary. Maybe you can learn something. That's an editorial remark. Pay attention, Hillary. You may learn something from the seventh grader. She says, although the war in Iraq is a complicated thing for a seventh grader to understand, you've made it clear to me that the current war in Iraq is a much larger thing than just the war. It is the fight for our very survival. You have taught me that winning that war and killing the terrorists is the key to survival of our life, liberty, freedom, and our country. For that, I thank you. You have put this war into perspective for me. You've made the war so easy to understand. I hear so many things on the news and TV disagreeing with the war and calling the war a waste. These people are wrong. Even I, a seventh grader, understands this. If we fail in Iraq, it will be people my age, our children, and future generations who will suffer such a loss. We will be left either under the rule of the terrorists or with a burden to finish what the heroes of today started and tried to do but were not allowed to complete their job because of the vermin, schmucks, morons, idiots, and moron idiots. I understand that these evil people will try to kill us, blow up our cities, and try to take over the USA. Why don't these Democrats understand this? Just like you said, if they would have taken care of Hitler when they could have in the 1930s, many lives could have been spared in World War II. Whenever I see a soldier, she writes, I thank them for my freedom. When my dad sees them in a restaurant, he pays their bill. I wonder sometimes why the government will not help soldiers who are the true heroes, but would rather help drug users, bums, and drunks. Why doesn't the government provide enough money to the kids and wives of the soldiers killed or injured in the war? They deserve to be taken care of for life. There are so many government jobs. Why not give the injured soldiers a job with the government rather than some lazy person? You hear this? This is from a seventh grader now. Hillary, pay attention. Give a job to a hero. Let them work and take care of them and not the undeserving vermin. That's all. I totally agree with you about the teeth pulling. See, she jumps around like me. I had my two canines pulled. They said two shots of Novocaine. How many do I get? 12. 12. 12. I wanted to punch my dentist in the mouth. I probably hurt more than without them. I have to get four more pulled by an oral surgeon. That should be fun. Not. I know you're really busy, Savage. However, I sure hope you can come to my party. I just want you to know that me inviting you to my party is a gesture of thanks to you for educating me every day about some topic. You do make a difference. I'm an example of this. I thank you so much and do not quit. That's all. P.S. Mama Savage was right. It all comes down to whether it will be Italian or Chinese at night. And that comes to me from a seventh grader somewhere in Illinois named Ariel D. And Ariel, thank you. You're a very intelligent young person, and you are the future of America. And I know that there are hundreds of thousands of young people like this young girl out there who understand it all. Unfortunately, when you looked at that debate last night, it was sickening. I got to tell you, well, if you listen to the show, you know what I said. So what's the point of me telling you already? I told you last night what I was going to tell you. Here it is. I summarized it in a paragraph. It's on michaelsavage.com. I dashed it off last night. Hillary evasive, others embarrassing, acted like high schoolers. Blitzer loses control, a fiasco all around. Asbestos suit remark will haunt her for remainder of campaign. Remember, asbestos, Hillary, is a toxic metal. Obama like an usher in a movie theater. Daughter doddering old fool. Kucinich a crypto alien. Biden surprisingly dignified and focused. These unreality shows are a national disgrace. Cheering, clapping, compared with the British parliamentary system, an open system of idiocy followed by chicanery. I kept it short and sweet. That's all. So what do you want to talk about? Patients in New York were not told of misuse of syringes by the doctor, the anesthesiologist who reused the syringes to save a few bucks. And they haven't put him in jail yet. He hasn't even lost his medical license. This is a great story, actually. I cut it out from today's Old York Times. Patients were not told of misuse of syringes. And an anesthesiologist in Nassau County who used improper procedures. The anesthesiologist, finally, was named Harold Finkelstein of Plainview. Now, they knew about this for years, but two of his patients have contracted hepatitis C. But the government in New York has done nothing to Finkelstein. There are several hundred of them who are told now to get tests for bloodborne infections, including hepatitis and HIV. Are you listening to this carefully? You got to ask yourself, how did he not lose his license? Well, you got to read the whole article, which I've done for you. Joanne Daroshow, director of the New York-based Center for Justice and Democracy and a member of a state task force on medical malpractice, said the case illustrated, quote, a too cozy relationship between the medical profession and the people who supposedly regulate them. Are you listening to this carefully? How is this possible? How is it possible that a man who reused needles, syringes rather, and several of his patients got hepatitis C, the rest are being told to get tests for hepatitis and HIV, how come he's still in business? Answer, it's New York State. If you have a governor like Spitzer, why shouldn't you have a doctor like Finkelstein? I'll be right back.
Savage. Did-a-lit-lit-lit-lit.
Yeah.
Did-a-lit-lit-lit-lit.
Oh, little girl, oh my.
You sure look fine.
I love this song.
Yes, you appeal to me. I never set you free.
I just want to hear one more line. And then I'll go back to the hard stuff. Good at time. I got to stop right now. It's Rock and Roll Friday in the Savage Nation, and the guys are digging up some of my favorite tunes out there. I mean, we could do politics. What's the point? Tell me what the point is. I mean, they've already selected the next president somewhere behind. I don't know, somewhere they've done it. In a dark, dirty room somewhere, the deal's been done. 8 years of Bush, then it'll be 8 years of Clinton, then it'll be 8 years of Bush again. Maybe who's going to run after him? Which Bush will run next? After then, I'd say, we had 8 years of Clinton. We have 8 years of Bush. Then we're going to get 8 more years of Clinton. That's right. Then 8 more years of Bush. That's right. The other brother they'll dig up. Or a cousin from Venezuela, once they were a bilingual nation. I have so many stories here, I can't read them to you. Junkies love Delray Beach, Florida. That was a shocking story on the front page of. I missed the bullet on that one. I was down there a few months ago. I almost bought a house again. I don't want to knock it. I like it. It's a nice area. But, man. Whoever wrote this article and made it a front page story of the New York Times, on Florida coast, addicts find home in an oasis of sobriety. Delray Beach, Florida by Jane Gross. Somebody had it in for somebody in Delray Beach. You know, you don't know how stories get placed in the American media. You think it just happens? Either they wanted to drive property values down or it's a personal vendetta against someone. Somebody did something here that makes no sense. It's the heroin recovery capital of the world. Wow, I want to move there. Yeah, I want to be there. I want to be there. I want to be on Atlantic Avenue with all of these people. I can't wait to share an espresso. And what happens when they slip up? They break into your house and rob you? 5,000 people a week in halfway houses, recovery radio shows, a recovery motorcycle club and coffee house that boasts its own therapy group. I can guarantee you it's not a therapy group. I guarantee you it's a little sales out the back door. Delray Beach, a funky outpost of sobriety between Fort Lauderdale and West Palm Beach. I knew something was wrong with the joint. I went there, I didn't like it. I liked it, but I didn't like it. There was something like under the surface. Something under the surface everywhere I went. So, hey, God bless them. I hope they all recover, but you know no one recovers. Not for long. People fall, they slip back. Some can recover. Most don't want to recover. I'd recover what? And face the world? They don't want to face this world. Leave it to me. I'm cold and sober with the occasional beer at night. And believe me, you don't want to be where I am every day. You don't want to live the way I do. But for me, it's too late. WOR, New York. Matt, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. This is Matt from New York. I think you shouldn't run for president. I think you have to stay in the media, but we have to expand our audience.
If the rules were different, if I could stay on the radio and run for office and then be the president and still have a radio show, I'd consider it. But it's unfair. It's an unfair advantage. If you have a media show, you can't run for office because you have free airtime. That's the way the rules work. You get it, Matt?
No, but we don't need the free airtime. We have 28 million people. We're going to either donate or invest $20 each. So we're going to have a war chest of $500 million. Either.
What if I actually did this and the 28 million people gave an average of $10? I'd raise $280 million. That would be shocking. It would mean I'd immediately outdraw Hillary and Obama together, I think.
We can invest in that guy who had called up a couple weeks ago, had the movie, right? Or we could buy airtime on football games. The plumbers, the electricians would all agree with you, but they're not listening today. Everyone who listens today agrees, correct?
What? Where are the plumbers and electricians today?
They're not listening to WOR, but they would agree with our message.
What you're saying is the average blue-collar guy doesn't listen to talk radio, and if they do, they listen to the golfer for a few minutes in the morning or the wall banger.
Exactly. Now with $500 million, right, we'll invest in that guy's movie. We'll make plenty of money, and then we'll counterattack the ACLU. We'll put advertisements out. We'll be. I know you don't like the Super Bowl, but we'll buy an ad in the Super Bowl and get our message out. Who knows?
Yeah. What if I rented blimps to go over sporting events? Say, vote for Savage.
No, they're not voting for you. We'll get our. You're the big picture guy. We'll get someone to be president. All right, you have to run this media company. You're going to end up with the.
Oh, so you want me to stay on radio, and we should elect somebody, and I should organize the brains behind it. I should be the guy behind it.
Yeah, and running this company. Let's make movies like you want that prey America. You know we'll make a ton.
Yes,
of money.
No, I hear you, but I have enough. Believe me, we're going to do a movie. We have enough investment capital right now between a very small group of people to do that movie. And so that's going to happen. But I hear you, Matt. You're a real fan, and I really appreciate it. Who was Savage Shoes? Oh, here's a good one. Tucson, Arizona. Sue has got a great question about Thanksgiving. Sue, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. You did a show about 4 years ago on how to talk or debate with your liberal guests at Thanksgiving. And I need some pointers on how to discuss.
All right, well, it's simple. Now, here's the first question. Are you actually doing the cooking and carving?
Yeah, I will be doing the cooking, but I'm going to...
All right, well, here's how you start. Since you're the hostess, you have to be polite, but you have tremendous power, and you don't even know it in your cutting knife. Now, here's what you do. If a liberal starts in telling you that Hillary is wonderful and she's honest and straightforward, you don't say a word. What you do is you make sure when all the plates are empty, you cut the behind off the turkey and you put it delicately on that person's plate. You put the parson's nose on the plate of that guest. You see, you could get very English about it, Sue.
But wait, there was another one.
No, that's a new one. I didn't actually use that technique till now. I came up with that today. The dogs tend to like the parson's nose. I like the neck. I've always liked the neck of turkeys. It reminds me of Dennis Kucinich on a water diet, somehow, the turkey's neck. There are some other techniques, yes, but... You know, Thanksgiving is a time of peace and love. My suggestion is say we don't talk about politics or religion. Or you can talk about religion, but not politics. But please, why don't you just avoid politics on Thanksgiving Day? It's easy to do. Or is it?
Savage. Boom, boom, boom.
Story for you. CNN pre-planned and censored every question at the debate last night, like I didn't know it. That's what people are saying. I could see that. I saw it was all a setup, and it was clear from the beginning when they used a man like that Blitzer guy. You knew what was coming. Every single question asked during a debate by the audience had to be approved by CNN, says Maria Luisa. University of Nevada at Las Vegas, who asked Hillary Clinton whether she preferred diamonds or pearls at last night's debate. And she wrote about this on her MySpace page this morning, that CNN forced her to ask the frilly question instead of a pre-approved query about the Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Repository. I was asked to submit questions, including lighthearted, fun questions. You hear this? Did you hear this? Here's an intelligent young college student said, I was asked to submit questions, including lighthearted, fun questions. I submitted more than five questions on issues important to me. I did a policy memo on Yucca Mountain a year ago and was the finalist for the Truman Scholarship. For sure, I thought I would get to ask the Yucca question that was approved by CNN days in advance. So what happened? Writes Louisa. They asked her to ask about pearls and diamonds. Did you hear this? I mean, do you understand we're living in the equivalent of the ex-Soviet Union in a light note right now? Do you understand that when we have a moron like Sean Penn, who lives in a mansion in Marin County, California, and goes and visits a dictator like Hugo Chavez, and comes back and says Hugo Chavez is much more positive for Venezuela than negative, do you understand the danger we are in? A friend of mine ran into a young man from Venezuela in Miami last night and called me and said, because this young man in Venezuela was in a pro-democracy rally in Venezuela. He's now on the government's hit list, and he cannot even go back to his own country because Chavez's goons will pick him up and beat him and put him in a prison. And here we have this low, slimy creature called Sean Penn going there and kissing this dictator's butt. What in the world do you liberals think of this? How in the world can you live with yourself when you realize you're on the wrong side of history? How can you live with yourself? Is it the drugs? Was it the fact that you were drugged in your mother's womb? What is it that does this to you? Glenn, WOR New York, topic, please.
Hey, how's it going? I was listening to what you were saying about the motorcycle club in Delray. One of the things that you brought up was that people tend to slip when they're in those recovery things.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a member of one of the 12-step fellowships for about 18 years. I have 12 years clean. And
wow. There are definite successes, and good luck to them. I wouldn't know how to treat junkies. So whatever works is fine. But the attrition rate is very high. It's like, let me read you the percentages. You're one of the rare ones. You know that.
Well, I know what I see around me.
Let me read this. Wait, the people who fall out is, I don't have the exact number, but they said it's very high. I don't want to give a percentage that's off here. But the 12-step meetings, 115 12-step meetings a week, where gossip is of romance between recovering addicts, overdoses, suicides, and friends who have successfully moved back home, blah. Did you see the article?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. And it says the overdoses are a big concern to the detectives in Palm Beach County. They say Detective Gary Martin and the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office say that the drug overdoses is a bigger concern than anything. 218 overdoses in 06, 241 during the first 9 months of 07. And a detective says, I consider close to one overdose every 36 hours a big problem. You hear this? So how have you stayed clean so long?
Well, I actually do the work. I mean, there's a lot of people that go to the places I go, and they just go there to hang out and do whatever. But basically what it comes down to, when you join one of these 12-step fellowships, like I'm in NA, when you go there, if you're not willing to do the work and you're not willing to better yourself, you're not going to get better.
Here it is. Wait, hold on. I'm not going to run past you here. It says that about 90, there's a 90%, it says, 90% of the people fall back if they go to short-term treatment. You hear this? Relapse rates range from 90% for short treatment programs with no follow-up care to 40% when treatment is comprehensive and long-lasting. But it says even then, new research shows that sustained addiction leads to changes in the brain that make relapse all but inevitable for some. So you're fighting a big problem, my friend, and I take my hat off to you. You know, it's a terrible thing, the drugging of America's youth. And I don't want to dwell on when you got started and turn that into the topic here, because I think it would be bad for you, Glenn. I just want to say thank you for calling. Thank you for calling. Yeah, the drug problem is the biggest problem in America. It's actually bigger than the terrorism. In terms of daily damage to our society, drug addiction and the drugging of our children. And it starts young with prescription drugs such as Ritalin. And marijuana. In fact, I want to read you something. How many times have I told you that marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs, specifically for the reason that many of you think it's a benign drug? And yet in every movie they show people, relaxing with a joint, right? Every Hollywood movie shows a middle-aged woman having a joint like it's nothing, like it's a martini. Let me read you something. It says, sobriety is a tightrope addicts walk even years into recovery. Claire C., arrived here at age 19, a 6-foot beauty, withered to 100 pounds by heroin. But in Delray Beach, she got sober, got a modeling job, a normie boyfriend, a condominium, and 2 dogs. Okay? Then a year ago at age 27, everything unraveled. Miss C battled depression and smoked marijuana to take the edge off her misery. Smoked marijuana. Then upgraded to cocaine and OxyContin. She text messaged friends from recovery urging them to stay away from her. You hear this? So now, there's the answer there. So she took a joint, and that was the end of the road. I'm warning you, youngsters, you don't listen to me. You know, you're going to do what you want anyway. I'm just telling you, marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs. It's an entry-level drug. Look what it did to the actor from California who thinks Hugo Chavez is a great man. It distorts your mind. Don't you understand that? Don't you understand it distorts your reality and makes you an easy victim, a malleable lump of clay for demagogues to use? It's pointless. What do I care what you do to yourself? I really don't care. It's not my business. I'm giving up on all of it. I don't care. I'm going to just do rock and roll and menus and cooking. I think I'm going to give up on caring about anybody and anything. I told you yesterday I put a check mark through Israel. I said, good luck to you. You got the military. You do nothing. Good luck to you. You take care of your problems. Stop complaining about it. Next, it's the people who are drug addicted. Sorry to hear it. Your problem. Take care of it. I'm going to become like Ayn Rand. It's their problem. What do I care? What am I going to eat my heart out over? If Israel has the third or fourth largest military on earth, whatever it may be, trillions of dollars of U.S. aid, and they're unwilling to fight Hezbollah and kill them. They're unwilling to take out Syria when they can or Iran's nuclear reactors when they can. What do you want me to do? Answer, nothing. It's not because they've done nothing for me. It means that's not the issue. I speak about many issues. It's because it's futile. It is just futile. There are certain things that are futile. Do you understand there's a word in the English dictionary called futility and futile? And some are inevitable. And some countries or nations turn a corner and there's no going back. Where we are on that curve, I don't know. Many of you are pessimistic and think we've gone over that edge. We've turned that corner and there's no going back. I'm not quite there yet with this country. But there's only so much I can do. But when I see the corruption and I see the treason at the highest levels of this country, and I see the Democrats are actually not no better, but actually worse in terms of the amount of money they're taking out of the system, robbing us through pork barrel spending, which they call earmarking today, to make it sound a little nicer. In high school, we called it pork barrel spending. It brought down many a government in the past. But today, there's a difference. The reason it will not bring down the Democrats is because the press and the Democrat Party are one and the same. They own them. They own them. They own them. It's a one-party lock system. Look at Wolf Blitzer, that little marionette last night, that embarrassment. I don't know how his mother and father could take him at Thanksgiving after this. I wouldn't even let him in the house. Now, you talk about if he was a relative, I wouldn't let him come to dinner. He isn't even worth the turkeys behind, to be honest with you. 1-800-449-8255. What do you want me to talk about here? How about music? God, I needed a cappuccino, but I need an espresso right now. I'll tell you why, because there's a problem, though. I only have a couple hours more of radio. If I have it now, then I can't drink and I won't be able to sleep tonight if I have one. But on the other hand, if I don't have it, then I can't do the show as well as I could. So it's a choice. Either I sacrifice myself for you in the show, and then I suffer all night, or you suffer for the next 2 hours and I have a better night. I'll be right. No, it's not. That would have been a good break. That's my fast slap in my break time. But I'm not going to take a break. I'm not interested in any of these topics. I am not interested in Wolf Blitzer. I'm not interested in Hillary Clinton. I'm not interested in junkies in Delray Beach. Seattle schools say Thanksgiving is for mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. Holiday called bitter reminder of 500 years of betrayal. Do you hear this? How did Seattle become so left-wing? What happened there? It was once a city. I remember it from, I started going to Seattle on book tours. My first book was out in 72, Earth Medicine, Earth Foods. I toured in the 70s, and I did 10 city tours. It was very enlightening for a person who had originally been from New York and then lived in Hawaii. And see, I always loved Seattle. The people were very literate. It was a high rate of literacy and a high rate of suicide. Is it the climate? Is it the drinking? Is it the Tumwater? What did it? What destroyed the mind of the people in Seattle that they hate the country so much? Look, if you look at the man-animal love thing, love, you want to call that love, in other words, bestiality, they had it up there on a farm in Menclaw. And it's interesting, the name is perfect, Menclaw. You think of a name like that, who could come up with a town like that? It was perfectly suited for what they were doing with animals. But it's no laughing matter. It's a degenerate, sick, psycho, it's a psycho area. It makes San Francisco almost look conservative, Seattle. What happened to them? Portland's not far behind. Both of them, and these were once areas with basically blue-collar industries, fishermen, lumbermen. Something happened there. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I don't know how people get this way. Is it the despair that leads them to that? Who cares? I don't live there. I don't go to the Pike Street Fish Market, so what do I care? Why don't they go outside the fish market and say, don't eat the fish at the Pike Street fish market because it's unfair to the fish? Why don't they have Sean Penn come up there with Hugo Chavez and call it capitalism, stealing fish from the sea? That's next for Sean Penn, that stupid moron. Hey, Sean, why don't you just move to Venezuela with your children and put your children into a goon squad? Instead of them riding skateboards in Ross, Sean, why don't you take your children down to Venezuela and let them join a goon squad and put on black ski masks, and then they'll be a happy camper? Because you love Venezuela, Sean. Why are you living in horrible capitalist Marin County? Move to Venezuela, put your children in a goon squad. Then you'll be a complete person and will know you're not lying. That's all, is what I'd like to say. But he doesn't listen to this show. He only listens to his own, I don't know what he listens to. I don't care what he listens to. It's beyond comprehension. I don't know. I feel bad for his children, to be honest with you. A father like that, what chance do they have? KNEW, San Francisco. John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I can tell you what's wrong with the future of America. I'm sitting here, San Francisco, looking at a mural painted, I'm sure, at the expense of the city, Che Guevara, with a sign saying the worker struggle has no borders, and a bunch
of... Let him drop dead. Che Guevara was a Marxist murderer, and the day they try to take my borders away is the day it's all over. That's the day they're going to trigger a civil war in this country. I can guarantee you that's never going to happen. One day we're going to have a military presence on the Mexican border. It's out of control right now. The illegals are running over the border. The drugs are pouring over the border. And both parties are looking the other way. We all know it. This should have ended years ago. They're lying to us that they're doing something. They're lying to us, all of them. Look at Hillary's behavior last night. Look what she wants to do. She wants to erase the borders. But well, let's hear if the Republicans will get up and say the other side is worse than us. That we may be wimps and losers, but they're absolute traitors. Then I'll believe a word a Republican says. John, thanks for the call. We have that soundbite. I want to play it before we take a break, which is the beginning of that so-called debate, which was in the Soviet Union in the 30s. Was it the 30s? They had show trials. In the 20s or 30s? They had show trials in the 30s. They were fake trials, and they killed hundreds of thousands of people under Stalin. They were fake trials. We are watching show debates. They're all fake. Where's the Clinton one?
Senator Clinton, recently in an interview on CNN, you said of the last debate that you weren't at your best that day. You stumbled on an important question involving illegal immigration. But your opponents are saying that that's really part of a larger pattern with you, that you often avoid taking firm positions on controversial issues. And one of your opponents on the stage calls this the politics of parsing. How do you respond to that?
Well, Campbell, I am happy to be here tonight, and this pantsuit, it's asbestos tonight.
Let's stop right here. Now, do you have any idea how out of control Hillary Clinton is? This pantsuit is asbestos? Now, let's stop for a minute. Does that make her the smartest woman in the world to use asbestos as a metaphor when asbestos is a dirty word amongst liberals in particular? Haven't many fortunes amongst liberal lawyers been made by suing companies that made asbestos and still are being made by these slime-sucking pig lawyers breaking companies because they manufactured asbestos? So it's a metaphor, I understand that. But would you want to elect a woman who wears an asbestos suit? She doesn't answer the question. Listen to the rest of it.
I'm aware that some people say that, but I think that the American people know where I've stood for 35 years. I've been fighting for issues affecting women and children.
Stop right here. She didn't answer the question, and nobody followed up and said, hey, look, you're parsing right now. Stop it. Stop it. You're not in communist China. Answer this question. No one did that. I'll be right back.
Do-bop-si-do, boom-ba-boom-boom-boom. Do-bop-si-do, boom-ba-boom-boom-boom.
I'll always want you because my heart is true.
Thanks, Frankie. All right, I'm not in the mood. I'm inhaling, like, burnt electrical wire now. I'm in a studio. I just almost killed myself during the break. I don't know what's going on with me. I told you I have studios in various locations. I got a bug up my behind to change a light just now, and the bulb blew up. It's always like a bad, it's like a three-prong, blah, blah, blah. Put it in, and it blew up. So I went, the circuit breaker. So during the last break, I threw the circuit breaker. The thing caught fire, and now the smoke's all over the studio. This is so bad. I'm inhaling... Well, the show must go on. I'm inhaling now electrical fumes. There's no fire, mind you. It stopped smoking. Smoke came out like a car on fire. out of a front lamp. But it got in the studio. Don't ask. It's a mess. Just a total mess. But I'm sharing. I'm just sharing with you what goes on here. I work alone. I don't like anyone around me. San Diego, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Dr. Savage, quickly, I'd like to comment on the dopers that you were just talking about. I first started listening to you when I was about 17 years old. I was given a three-year sentence in the California Youth Authority. For about the first 6 months of this was due to a severe drug habit that I had at the time of heroin.
Okay, I buy it.
I first started listening to you about 6 months into my sentence. You get a little Walkman. You were about the only thing I could pick up that was in English, and I listened to you for about 2.5 years.
Hmm.
The things you did in my life, I can't put into words in one segment, sir, but I'm forever grateful. But for that, I'd also like to comment on the younger generation of dopers, if I may.
Please.
This new generation of druggies, and I do try to minister and talk to a lot of these younger guys, they want more drugs, they want better drugs, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get them. They're out to make names for themselves. They're out to blow their brains completely. They're not out for conservation. They're out for the body. They're 100% self-centered, selfish, and self-seeking.
I don't know what to say. There's an article out that's very alarming about people in some state who are licking toads to get high. Have you heard about that one?
No, sir.
No, it's not a joke. There are toxic toads. I had a dog once ate a toad and died in Hawaii. He was a little dog. So I know there are toxins in various frogs. But apparently there are a group of people who lick toads somewhere in America. And to get high, if you lick them. Here, Kansas news story, Kansas City, on the alarming rise of toad-licking incidents. Can you believe the maniacs out there?
Doesn't surprise me at all.
So you're finding that the show helped you get through recovery. I'm glad to hear it, my friend. I wish I could speak to you personally, but I can't. I know that I must help somebody out there. Somebody's listening to this show. Maybe you identify with the fact that it's agony for me as well as for you, that you're not alone, that everybody's in agony. And right now, everyone's in agony in this country. The fraudulence and the corruption has never been this bad. I'll be back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
No, this is too soft. Kill it. Kill it. Kill it. What was the one you played earlier that was fast that I liked for the Rock and Roll Friday? You picked one. It was the second song that we had in the last hour. Do you remember it? Something with a girl or this, that. You forgot already? Is anyone there? Does anyone hear me? Forgot. All right. Now, on the one side, we have Hillary Clinton who says who answers no questions. They own the media. Wolf Blitz has become a bigger Lilliput, a smaller Lilliputian than he already was. He was already a nutty putty figure, a laughing stock in the news business. Now he's become a smaller man for asking questions that are soft and approved by Hillary and her campaign managers. And Hillary is not the brightest woman in the world. To say that she's wearing an asbestos suit was one of the biggest gaffes I personally have ever heard. And yet no one in the media has commented on it except yours truly. Asbestos? That's the correct choice for a so-called green candidate. She's wearing an asbestos suit to show. Forget about it. Don't you understand what I'm saying? It's all off. Now, on the other side, you got Bush, the oil man. And I'm going to read you an editorial from today's Investor's Business Daily, which I linked up on michaelsavage.com, which I recommend you download. I want you to understand I'm an independent conservative. I want you to hear this. Their editorial is written as such. Is Bush AWOL? A-W-O-I-L. AWOL. Gasoline prices already topping $3 a gallon, they write, are expected to hit an all-time high by Thanksgiving. So why does the administration remain deafeningly silent about the crisis, they ask? Pump prices have doubled since George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were inaugurated, though the oil men vowed to craft a new energy policy to expand the U.S. reserves and help wean America from dependence on foreign imports. Now, remember who's writing this. IBD is very conservative. But they finally have had enough with Bush and Cheney. You're not going to hear this on Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or O'Reilly. I can guarantee you. I'll continue the editorial. Shortly after taking office, Cheney headed an energy task force that recommended, among other things, boosting oil drilling on federal lands in Alaska, which I agree with, by the way, and in the Gulf of Mexico. Democrats in the Green Lobby fought it, as expected, but the administration never really pushed back. Not even after 9/11, when the president could have used his bully pulpit to steamroll foes with a compelling argument that Arab petrodollars were and still are funding terror. Even now, with energy consumers begging for relief at the pump, there's been little follow-up on those task force plans. When they were first proposed in early 01, gas hovered around $1.50 a gallon. Oil was $25 a barrel. Now gas is $3.05. Well, here in California, it's almost $5, by the way, and climbing. Crude is trading above $90 a barrel, marching ever closer to its inflation-adjusted high of $102 set in 1980. The administration doesn't seem to be even talking, let alone doing, much about the soaring cost of petroleum. It's far too high, observes Energy Secretary Sam Bodman, who apparently received his PhD in the obvious. In recent speeches, Bodman has talked more about rising greenhouse gases than rising gas prices. The Energy Department website promotes solar fairs and contests in which children can offer up ideas for solving the energy crisis. And they go on. Polls show two-thirds of Americans now say they're feeling the pinch from rising gas prices, a stat Hillary Clinton and other Democrats have seized on. Among low-income families, one in four say they've already missed a mortgage or rent payment due to higher energy costs. This winter, they can look forward to record-high home heating costs, too. And food prices are also climbing thanks to higher transportation costs. So I don't want to read every word, but they're basically saying is Bush AWOL. And they conclude by saying, otherwise, its inaction gives the appearance that it's turned a tin ear to a crisis hurting more Americans, one that a majority says is extremely or very important to their presidential choice. So there it is. IBD editorials on michaelsavage.com. In the last hour, we talked about turkeys. We talked about the turkey candidates and how Hillary would not answer a question. And, of course, the Lilliputian, Wolf Blitzer, was set up specifically to be the Lilliputian that he was. We also asked, I asked, why has Seattle become so America hateful? Why has Portland become so anti-American? And why am I saying that? What article triggered that question? Seattle schools say Thanksgiving is for mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. The holiday is called a bitter reminder of 500 years of betrayal. That's what they're teaching in Seattle schools, or a Seattle school. School says Thanksgiving is for basically mourning. And it's in Seattle public schools. It comes from Caprice D. Hollins, the director of Equity, Race, and Learning Support, and other officials, including Willard Bill Jr. of the Office of Native American Education. Do you hear this? This is unbelievable. And this is beyond comprehension. Why Seattle is so hateful? Well, if you take a look at the picture and you see the heifers in there in the school system, and you see the mean-faced, clipped-haired brigades that run the schools with the men who have no you-know-what in their body, you understand what's happened. Why the mean-faced, clipped-haired women are so un-American, I'll never understand, because if they should undermine us to the point where we can't defend ourselves, they will be stoned by those who do more than just getting stoned on marijuana. I still don't understand how they can be thinking this way. Answer, they're not thinking. They just hate the patriarchy and they hate the government. They are the government, though. Las Vegas, Nevada. Sandra, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I grew up in Seattle in the 40s and the 50s, and it was such a neat place. We could go on our bicycles and be gone all day long, riding all around.
But wait, Sandra, I know about that. America was like that in the 40s and 50s, but why has Seattle turned so far to the radical whack job left?
You know, the education was so good there Most of the people I went to high school with ended up going to a university somewhere or another. But then when Bill Gates came in, it started attracting a lot more liberal people, and it just went downhill from there. And I can't blame him, but that's...
So you're saying that the growth of Microsoft attracted people in the computer business, programmers who are largely left-wing?
Yeah, I think so.
I wouldn't know, but maybe you ought to change the company's name to Micro Hard. Maybe that would help. Maybe it's the word Microsoft that attracts the loonies. I can't say. KNEW, San Francisco. Dennis, you're on the Savage Nation. What do you say?
Yeah, Michael, I just wanted to remind you that some years ago, Oregon and Washington were invaded by Californians. And it got...
Well, that is true. In the 70s, a lot of the mean-faced, clipped-haired brigades drove their B-1 Volvos over the Oregon border and settled in Portland, where they destroyed the country starting in the city of Seattle. I mean, they destroyed the state starting in the city of Portland.
Same lines. Sometime, I don't know if you've ever done it, but stop on I-5 and go to a rest area and read the historical... they've got big signs with the history of of the place. And they talk about the murderers and rapists and greedy. These are the pioneers.
Oh, come on. I don't believe it. That's what they put on the roads in Seattle?
In Oregon. And I would imagine in Washington also, but I've read...
I can't believe this. I mean, the aura is gone. I understand that, but are the brains gone too? They ought to change the state's name from Oregon to Brain is Gone.
Well, not believe it unless you read it yourself.
I can't take it. I don't know how the people in Oregon have let themselves be taken over by these left-wing America haters. I've never seen such signs, but thank you, my friend. I'll be sure never to look for them. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com has these stories and more. Don't read it. Don't go on my website. Do me a favor. You'll get depressed. They're so horrible, the stories. They're really horrible. I cull them from around the country, and then I write a little editorial myself. Racist libs try to blame white for defending himself against black gang. Did you hear that story? You want to get even sicker? Three young black men break into a white man's home in rural Northern California. The homeowner shoots two of them to death, but it's the surviving black man who is charged with murder. Now the civil rights activists are coming out and saying it's unfair. You got to read the story. You're not going to believe it. You cannot believe the story. Arrest prompts call for release of Ramos and Compion. You remember the Border Patrol agents who were arrested by George Bush and that attorney down there in Texas who we know though what's really behind all of this. Two congressmen are calling for the immediate release of Ramos and Compion because the drug smuggler they shot in the behind was arrested again for drug smuggling. See, it's clear to me what that case is all about, but I can't say it on the air. That's all. You can figure it out. And what the attorney down there, the U.S. attorney, who he really is and who he works for. That's all. He doesn't work for the American people. Sean Penn says Hugo Chavez is much more positive for Venezuela than negative. This is while the Venezuelan warthog, is seizing power through a coup, jailing his opposition, having his thugs shoot college students. You will not see any of these stories. But this psychopath, in my opinion, Sean Penn, who lives in a mansion in a lily-white neighborhood, goes down there and glorifies thuggery like this. It's incomprehensible that he gets away with it. It's on my website. Read it. Read it and cry. Is Bush AWOL? Philippines government has agreed to an Islamic separatist Muslim homeland. So a part of the Philippines have fallen to the enemy. Did you hear that? Philippine government has made an agreement with the Islamic murderers and has created boundaries for a new Muslim homeland. Will that be coming soon to America? Well, with CAIR on the front lines, one never knows. One never knows. And would you believe that one of my advertisers has catered to the enemy himself? Yes, that's right. Now, more have actually doubled the ad that they bought here. So I'm not worried about it. But can you believe that a front group for terrorism like this would convince a major American company that I am a bigger threat to the stability of America than they are? Can you believe we're living in such a world? There's so much that I want to say on this that I'm not going to waste my time with. All I can tell you is that it's a disgrace that a front group for terrorism like this can get away with pretending to be a civil rights group, and that some advertisers would actually buy into that. And yet they probably are the type that said, well, if they were around when Hitler and the Nazis were taking power, they would have definitely done something. Guarantee you, they would have pretended that they would have done something to, in the Nazi time. And here they are living in Islamo-fascist times, taking the side of Islamo-fascism. So, there we are. What do we have here on the Savage News? I had some callers. Spokane. I have tons of callers. There are shows who can't get callers. I know what it's like in the beginning of radio. It's horrible. You look at a board, it's like a writer looking at an empty page. Today, thank God, those days are long. They are 15 years in the past. First year is murder in radio. You have to get your mother to call, your aunt, a cousin. You have to get fake callers that change their voice. That's what a certain comedian has to go through now. Never belong in talk radio. Had a nice thing going, schmoozed around in sports. He was a sock puppet for O'Reilly. He had a nice gig. What did he have to deal with radio? Why did the sock puppet of O'Reilly have to try radio? It's going to be a blemish on his life he'll never forget when he leaves. Beaten to a pulp. He's way out of his league. I mean, it's okay. You go. Look, O'Reilly uses Ann Coulter, who to me is one of the most verminous sluts I've ever seen in the world in terms of what comes out of her mouth. Why would that man have her on his show over and over again when we know she's a raging Jew hater? Why would he have her on and then pretend that he has her on because she's controversial? The answer is because the man has no bottom to how low he'll go in terms of digging for ratings. He's no different than Scarface on that station, the Frankenstein that they have on there who has high ratings. It's all about ratings. So, why, if Hitler were alive, in other words, he'd have him on and have a debate with him and say he disagrees with his policies, but thank you for coming on. It's unbelievable what people will buy. But look, P.T. Barnum said that there's a schmuck born every minute. I mean, a sucker born every minute. This way to the egress. It's a big country. If you want to listen to them, fine. I know you will anyway. But getting back to the sock puppet comedian, I mean, why did this man have to destroy himself by trying radio? He's going nowhere. Two books and he's out. I'll be right back.
Senator Clinton, would this be a sine qua non for you that any nominee you name to the Supreme Court would have to share your view on abortion?
Well, they'd have to share my view about privacy, and I think that goes hand in hand. Privacy, in my opinion,
so she's a sophist. There's a word for what Hillary Clinton is, which is a sophist. Look it up, S-O-P-H-I-S-T. Her husband was an expert sophist. They engage in sophistry on a regular basis, and that passes for a commentary in the United States of America because we have Lilliputians such as Wolf Blitzer in the media. That's all. Now you know why Giuliani won't come on the Savage Nation. He's no different. They all think that they can get away with sophistry, but they can't with me. So that's why I'm here for you. What can I tell you? Paul in Oregon, Cheryl, KXL, welcome to the Savage Nation.
You were preempted in Pinko, Portland today, and I just so happy I get to talk to you.
You're listening to me in Portland.
I know, that's because I'm on the phone, but you were preempted on the radio.
What, for a sporting event?
Exactly.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice to hear. So what's on your mind?
I want to thank you, Dr. Savage. About 5 years ago, I had a series of events that set me just into the depths of despair, and I found you on the radio, thank God. And, you know, if it wasn't for you, I don't even think I'd be here today. I was one of those people I guess you've been talking about that I was just smoking dope.
Well, wait a minute. But if I'm depressed half the time I'm on the air with what's going on, how does that make you feel better?
No, I don't know. I guess you make me feel like I'm...
That's bizarre. If I feel as bad as you did at your worst most of the time, why does that help you? In what way?
Just by knowing I'm not alone, I think.
Okay, now you answered your own question. You answered what I want. I'm glad you said it because I know that's what the magic is of the Savage Nation.
You know,
I mean, I express the agony of a lot of thinking people. They can't believe what's going on in this country. When you have a charlatan like Hillary Clinton being interviewed by a Lilliputian like Wolf Blitzer, and that passes for a Democrat debate, and not one newspaper that I know of would say it like it is. Not one writer in the entire country has said, using the metaphor of an asbestos suit was a real faux pas on the part of Hillary Clinton. Nobody says anything. The queen has no clothes. It's unbelievable to me. It's all a setup. She's the next president. The rest of the thing is a joke.
Savage.
Dil-li-li-li-lit.
Yeah.
Dil-li-li-li-lit.
Yeah.
Oh, little girl of mine.
It is. What is it? What is it? The Savage Nation on a Friday.
Yes, you appeal to me.
All right, terrific. Turn it off. Last century, middle of the last century. No one even listens to this anymore. Why do I play this music? I should play like something different. What do they listen to now? Christina Aguilar? Everywhere I go in supermarkets, it's like whiny, like feminist music. It makes me sick. I run out. Like whiny girl music everywhere. It's so awful. How the whiny chick music become so popular? Who listens to that? Always crying and whining over something. Play that song again, just out of spite. Let me hear it again. It's enough already. Bush to welcome Al Gore to White House. You heard it. Now you may say, well, Bush has gone over to the other side. You're wrong. He was always there. Bush to welcome Al Gore to the White House. Former U.S. President, Vice President Al Gore Leone will make a triumphant return to the White House on November 26th when U.S. President George W. Bush honors U.S. Nobel Prize winners. Now, this is one of the most fraudulent Nobel Prizes in history. How could you compare Al Gore, who is not a scientist, who won a fake Nobel Prize for politics, with an actual Nobel Prize winner who wins one in physics or chemistry or medicine? How can you lump them together? If you're George Bush, you can do so, because the man has no discernment here. Al Gore is being invited to the White House. It's unbelievable to me. I've never seen a country that puts up with more chicanery than this one. Here's an interesting story from today's Times. There's a billionaire, age 82. He is betting $1 billion of his own money on a product that will become inhaled insulin. You see, instead of injecting it, people will inhale it. Pfizer dropped this drug that he's betting nearly $1 billion of his own money on the effort. Now, the reason this story is interesting to me is not that the billionaire is putting his own money into making an inhalable insulin. Unto itself, it's a fascinating story. But if you read the man's story, it's worth getting to the end of this. Mr. Mann, the billionaire, is the son of a grocer who studied physics at UCLA, but he quit before getting a doctorate so that he could take a job to support his wife at the time and their child. One of his early successes was Pacesetter Systems, a heart pacemaker company. He started around 1970 and sold to Siemens for $150 million in 1985. That was a lot of money then. Today, of course, it's the cost of an apartment in New York. Then came MiniMed, a maker of insulin pumps for diabetics, which was sold to Medtronic for about $3 billion in 2001. 3 years later, he sold Advanced Bionics, a maker of implants that allow deaf people to hear, to Boston Scientific for $740 million. Okay, so now the guy is 82 years old. You think he's had enough, right? No, he's betting $1 billion of his own money in an inhaled insulin device. So he's given most of his money away. And it says Mr. Mann has had some trouble giving it away. About a decade ago, he said he would give $100 million each to up to 12 universities to establish institutes to help turn faculty ideas into marketable medical devices. But only 3 universities have been set up so far because some schools feared losing control of faculty inventions. You hear? You think most universities are these esoteric ivory towers. You don't know most of them are just greedy money-making machines that hide behind the polish of an academic structure. Most of them have failed the cowardly businessmen in so many departments, it's not funny. That's an editorial remark. Now, here's what I really wanted to read. As for Mr. Mann's 6 biological children, Mr. Mann has said he had already given them more than he should have, turning them into idle multimillionaires. He has also adopted the daughter of his current wife, his 4th. Let me read that again. The man's a billionaire. He's 82. He said he had already given his children more than he should have, turning them into idle multimillionaires. Quote, one tried working for 3 days and didn't like it, Mr. Mann said. Another didn't work a day in his life, he added. I would feel more comfortable if my kids were doing something worthwhile. That, to me, is a story unto itself. That's why I read so widely. I mean, I like to get to the bottom. That's an interesting story. A lot of these rich guys produce wastrels for children. Total wastes. I don't know how a person goes through a life without working a day in their life. I don't know how they don't want to stick a needle in their arm or taking the gas altogether. I don't know what they live for. What do they live for? What do they do all day? What do these kids do? Let's say he gave them each of them $100 million or $50 million or $20, and the kid never has to work again. He's going to live on the interest. If he made only 6% on the $100 million, he's going to make $6 million a year, and he's never going to work. Okay? What does he do all day? What does he do? He gets up and says, what, I'm going to go to the gym? Then I'm going to go buy a belt for $6,000 for my suit? And then he gets a haircut, and then he gets ready for dinner in the club? How can you live like that? How can you live such a worthless life? I don't understand it. I truly don't understand it. I was at a dinner the other night with people. I don't know their politics. I'm sure some of them were quite liberal, but we didn't get to that. It was more about science and children. And I overheard something down the table where one couple, they were a little older. I don't think they had a lot of money, but he said, well, we asked each other, he said, about him and his wife, if we had won the lottery and won $9 million, what we would do. And he said, we decided that we would continue to work because that's what we love to do, and we would just give the money away. I thought that was very interesting. Many people like to work. Work becomes the only salvation. I got to tell you, it's worked for me all my life. Rodin, the sculptor, wrote, work is the only salvation. When you get into trouble and you don't know what to do mentally, work, 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 whatever that work may be. Work your way out of the grave. WOR, New York. Larry, go ahead, please. What topic do you call about?
I'm calling about the medical board and that physician who was reheating syringes.
Yes, Dr. Finkelstein, Harvey Finkelstein of Plainview, the man who misused syringes. What's the story there?
Well, you know, I grew up a son of a disabled postal worker and sacrificed my entire life to become a cardiologist. I worked very hard to take care of thousands and thousands of people. How do you think I feel about a guy who does this and is not immediately removed from the practice of medicine? I'll tell you why.
I don't know. Larry, I don't know. And I want to ask you something because I'm reading the article on this doctor. And it turns out that the state has negotiated with his lawyer and they haven't thrown him out of the profession. How is that possible?
Because the people who are on the medical board, you think if you're a good doctor helping people, you're going to be on a medical board? It's the attorneys on the medical board doing a deal with the attorneys who are defending him. And what do we have? We've got criminal activity in a medical society.
I don't know, Larry. It would break my heart if I were you to be an honest, good doctor who killed himself to become a doctor. As you said, you were the son of a disabled worker. And you killed yourself, I imagine, to go to medical school and became a cardiologist. And here, listen to this one. Claudia Hutton, a spokesmouth for Commissioner Daines, said that it was routine for the department staff to negotiate with a doctor's lawyers in its investigations. Did you hear this?
I want to know how many of them.
What do they mean by negotiate is what I want to know. What does negotiate mean?
People are going to go to Dr. Finkelstein for their anesthesia.
I got news for you. If I had gone to this doctor and I found that he had reused a syringe and I got a disease, I wouldn't go to the medical board for balancing the scales, Larry.
100% with you. This is disgusting. The lawyer.
Well, Larry, here you are, a legitimate board certified cardiologist. You read about patients who were not told of misuse of syringes. Now, here's the second part of the story, though. Why do you suppose he did this?
Because he's probably either mentally ill or money is his god. I can't think of any other reason.
Dr. Finkelstein, 52, who specializes in pain management, we'll talk about that in a minute, was reusing syringes when drawing doses of medicine from vials that hold more than one dose. In other words, although he would use a new syringe for each patient, he would use the same syringe on a patient when he dipped from one drug to another. In other words, he was contaminating the drugs with the syringe.
Disgusting.
A seventh grade student knows that you're going to take the blood of a patient who's infected with hepatitis C, and it could back up through the syringe and enter the vials and infect another patient. So is this guy a wacko, or did he do it to save a few bucks?
Who knows?
Well, how much does a syringe cost, the doctor, Larry? How much is a syringe?
How much could it be? $1, $2, $3?
All right, so then it's not the money. That's what I figured. The guy's nuts.
And yet, we now all realize how nuts he is. He's still seeing patients. Monday, he'll be injecting people.
Terrible, just terrible. Well, this is an example of New York State, which is really corrupt. It's a corrupt state. But for having such a long delay in making the notification to patients, to me, it's criminal, not outrageous. And why is Finkelstein, A, why is Finkelstein still practicing, and B, why is he not in prison?
Political, polluted legal system, period.
Well, this story, now that it's hit the news, this guy's finished. It's over. He's got to pay for what he's done to these people. Larry, God bless you. You're doing a wonderful job. Don't let this guy get you down. You know, here's a cardiologist who struggled to be a doctor and does it the right way, and he wants to know why a corrupt doctor like that, allegedly corrupt doctor like that, is not punished. Answer. I'm going to answer the question another way, because I have to reach into my own background to answer that. I once went to a religious man who I respected and asked him something about injustice within my own profession. I think I was a teacher at the time. And I said, how can I continue to teach when so many of the people in this business are demented and don't care about the children? And he said, well, your job is to be better than them. In other words, if you're a better teacher, then be a better teacher and don't worry about what they do. That's what he said to me. You can't fix the world yourself. All each man or woman can do is try to do it the right way. That's all you can do. Don't you understand that's all you can do? That's all you can do. And yeah, you get agitated over this kind of story, but you can't fix it. When you have a government that is corrupt and you can buy your way out of a thing like this, and this is what we know about. Can you imagine the cases that haven't hit the news? You know, every time I go into a laboratory for a blood test, you think I'm kidding you. I joke around. I don't know if they're clean needles. I have no idea. I ask the attendants. You know who the attendants are? Have you ever looked at them? The people who shoot, take your blood? Who are these people? Most of them, maybe they're nice people. But the fact is, what's their training? They wrap the rubber around your bicep. The next thing you know, they're tapping a vein. And I ask them, is the syringe clean? Like, I'm helpless already in the chair. I'm strapped to a chair. It's like flying on an airline today. You go in there. It's too late. What if the guy's crazy? What if the person who's drawing your blood is nuts? And it's not a clean needle. How would you know? How would you know? I want to know why I, as the patient, don't have control over this. That's what I'd like to know. Why is there no clear control over blood drawing in this country? You talk about that great book of the turn of the century about slaughterhouses. I can't recall the name of it, but to me, this is like a slaughterhouse, these blood drawing labs. It frightens me when I go in there. That's why I hate to go in there. I hate needles to begin with. I don't like that blood withdrawn. But you have to do tests, obviously, living in a modern world. I don't know if those syringes are clean. The jungle. To me, every time I go in there, I feel like I'm in Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. 1-800-449-8255 Mike in Delaware. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Well, Dr. Savage, it's an honor. I really didn't expect to get on. One of the main reasons I called is because I drive from Ocean City to Middletown, Delaware. It's about a two-hour drive. And I love to listen to you, but WWOR is the only one I can get. And I keep getting interrupted by Tejano music stations.
Where? Out of Mexico or a local Mexican a Spanish language station?
It's local, and it seems to be more. It's not that your signal is weak in WWOR. Of course not.
You're down in Delaware. Yeah, you're down in Jersey and Delaware. OR is a New York station. I mean, it's a strong signal, but you've got to pick it up over out of a local affiliate, Mike. Thank you. What can I do about that? Nothing. What can I do? Nothing. Zero. Nothing. Zero. So who do you have confidence in the political world? Me, zero. Nothing. No confidence whatsoever. When I saw that the fix was in last night, and believe me, I saw it. I known it from the beginning. I mean, I've watched a few of these debates. The whole thing looks like rubbish to me. Giuliani. I'm sorry, I don't know the man. I'm sure I'd like him, you know, if I had a pizza with him or whatever, or a glass of wine. But as far as being a conservative, don't believe a word of it. Rudy Giuliani assured a conservative legal group, that's the Federalist Society, today, that if elected presidente, he would appoint federal judges who adhere to their principles. He also praised the judge who declared the capital city's gun ban unconstitutional and ridiculed efforts to eliminate the words under God from the Pledge of Allegiance. I wish I could believe him. In a speech marking the 25th anniversary of the Federalist Society, Giuliani spelled out a conservative legal agenda in which he cited Supreme Court Justices Scalia, Thomas, and Alito, and Chief Justice Roberts as models for the judges he would appoint to the federal bench. I wish he meant it. I wish he meant it. Giuliani has been held suspect by some conservatives because as mayor of New York, he backed some gun control laws and has supported a woman's right to abortion. He has sought to alleviate those concerns, aligning himself with legal conservatives, such as former Solicitor General Ted Olson, who introduced him at Friday's gathering. Giuliani was the only presidential candidate to speak to the group, a testament to his close ties to Olson and other prominent members of the organization. Several of them, blah, blah, blah. All right, so there it is. But for the life of me, I can't trust the man who will not meet the Savage Nation. He'll meet liberals. He'll meet illegal alien groups. Why won't he answer to you? Now, I want you to go on to michaelsavage.com if you think that I'm making up the power of this audience. If you think I'm just making it up for effect. Never mind, you didn't hear it anywhere. You didn't read it anywhere. Why don't you prove it for yourself? Go on my website. Go down the right side of the page. You will see a tiny little box that's hardly noticed. It says, we passed the 28 million vote mark. Will Giuliani, McKennedy, and Romney agree to meet the Savage Nation? Savage web poll. Click here to vote for Savage. And it says, should Michael Savage run for the presidency? Yes or no? View results. 29,939,480 people said yes. No, 3 million people said no. Did you hear what I just said that? That's 33 million people have voted on my website since 2/28/07. That is a record for anybody in radio. It's a record for anybody in the media. It's a record for anybody who's actually put themselves out onto the web. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? You have all the power in the next election. You will control who becomes president. Not the Lilliputian Blitzer. Not Fox News Channel. It's you, baby, and I'll be back.
Savage.
Ba 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 ba.
Turn off the music. I have a new sound effect for the Savage Nation. It's my horn. It's a bicycle horn, which attracts attention in a certain way. I had it on my old bicycle, but then when I bought a new bicycle 2 years ago, I failed to put it on the handlebars. But since I live in a drugged up liberal county where people don't know what they're doing, and if you're riding on a bicycle path or a road even, and they let dogs on long leads cross in front of you, or they'll walk right in front of your bike on the wrong side of the bike path just to show you who they are, and you have to stare them down and almost run them over. This used to get liberals' attention. They would jump and go, ooh, my, 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 but they got out of the way. So I think I'm going to use it now on the radio show. If I get a liberal who drives me crazy, I will use this. If Wolf Blitzer was in here, I'd strap him to a chair, and I would do this until he was deaf. Because he's deaf anyway. Wolf Blitzer is finished. Totally finished. He is an absolute wimp and a stooge of the Democrat machine. We've known that. People are saying, oh, Wolf Blitzer caved into Hillary. He's always been owned by the Democrat Party. I don't know why people are shocked that CNN did the entire debate simply to make Hillary look good. They also let Richardson speak the longest next to him and Obama. And Richardson is one of the most bumbling fools I've ever seen in my life. But apparently, for some reason, the Democrats think he's a plus for them. Where does he come up to be a plus for them? I don't understand that. And, of course, they changed the questions for the students. You heard that. Asking stupid short questions. She would not answer anything about illegal aliens. She wouldn't answer why she flipped and flopped. She spun her communist-like platitudes. And attacked unsafe toys. It's unbelievable to me. It is incomprehensible. You don't know this, that her chief strategist is a man named Mark Penn. He's the CEO of Burson Marsteller. It's a PR company that represents Aquadots, the company that makes the bead toys with an adhesive coating that turns into the date rape drug when children suck on it. You don't know that either. So when she says I'm wearing an asbestos pantsuit today, you can bet your boots she's wearing more than a pantsuit of asbestos.
I can't stop for coffee. I have to write a radio spot.
Oh, about what?
Fine art connoisseur.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Money, taxes, death. Money, taxes, death, the mortician. What would you like to talk about? I told you I'm an expert on virtually everything except baseball, football, basketball, and hockey. I could talk about all of those other topics. I don't want to get stuck on Pakistan because I don't know who's running the country anymore. How could he be saying we need to have a free elections in Pakistan? We just had free elections in the Gaza Strip. The deluded liberal Jews gave back the Gaza Strip and gave the greenhouses the Jews were raising orchids in and roses. Gave them to the Palestinians. Good liberal Jews, deluded fools that they are, raised $8 million and bought the greenhouses from the Jews who were kicked out of the Gaza Strip by their corrupt government. Gave the greenhouses to the Palestinians thinking that they would use them to grow roses and such. Instead, they stole the day after the Jews left, they stole the water pumps, they stole the hoses, they stole the PVC pipes, the Palestinians did. And then they are now using the Gaza Strip to launch rockets into Israel. This is a microcosm of what would happen if you gave the vote to the people of Pakistan. Don't you understand the delusion of democracy? They're not ready for it. It won't work. It's insanity. I mean, Bush is saying it because he knows it sounds good to say that. But the fact is, Musharraf is the best thing that ever happened to Pakistan. They're not ready for anything but a benevolent dictator. I'm not too sure that we're not too far away from it. So, what do you want me to say? I mean, I'm telling you the way I see it. It's a depressing world out there, to be frank. It's really agitating. You see, I'm telling you, it's pretty horrible out there. Now, look, you could be a con man and tell everyone everything's coming up roses, and you could take one side or the other. You could say, Democrats the answer. Oh, no, Republicans the answer. Oh, no, I think the Democrats, they're the ones to go to. Oh, no, it's the Republicans, they're the ones to go to. So go listen to the wall banger Hannity or the golfer Limbaugh. I don't really care. God knows you need them. You need somebody to believe in, and you may as well just listen to them. Now, how do you explain this? How could you explain this to yourself? How do you explain the fact that the top newspapers in America are dropping like rocks, their circulation, like falling through the well? Losses across the country. All the newspapers are slipping. I had no idea that their circulations are so low, actually. The New York Post, for example, which I read the website every day. I like the paper. Even though they hate me because they're owned by Murdoch. And there's a rule against Michael Savage and anything owned by Murdoch because he doesn't own me. And his talent, his puppets, his marionettes are my competitors, amongst other reasons. The daily circulation of the New York Post is only 667,000 a day? I had no idea. I really didn't know this. See, there's something I didn't know here. The New York Times only has a circulation of about 1 million people a day? I had no idea. I know that my average quarter hour listenership is minimal, 616,000 people. That's according to one rating system, not according to all rating systems, including if you sample Arbitron reports with other reliable indicators in rated and unrated markets. This show is the number three show in America with an estimated 8 to 10 million listeners a week. Rush is one. Hannity's two, Savage is three. Make no mistake about it. Last I checked, and I have it in my hand from the Talkers magazine, O'Reilly's number 7 with an estimated 3.25 million listeners. That's according to Talkers magazine. Never mind what they all tell you. This is the data according to Talk Media, Inc. Now, why am I making an issue of that? Because here's the interesting thing. I'm never mentioned. The government doesn't mention me. The media has a policy of denying I exist, which is wonderful, actually, when you think about it. I like to feel as though I'm living in the ex-Soviet Union and that there's been a purge of intellectuals or talkers or writers or whatever you want to call us who don't agree with the government media complex. 616,000 people every quarter hour come in and out of this tent. Did you hear me? And overall, the whole day part, that's just people 12 plus, but if you add them all up, the day part cum is 3.7 million. That means on an average day, 3.7 million people are coming in and out of this tent. That's enormous. That's phenomenal. What a responsibility. I really better get serious now. I had no idea it was bigger than the New York Times. I really didn't know. Here I am, a guy in an undershirt with a dog in a studio, talking the way he sees it. I didn't know that my God, I better get serious now. I better get focused after all these 15 years. I hadn't any idea. Had I not known, had I only known. Sonora, California. Suzanne, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage, I just want to let you know that you are a very intelligent individual. Me and my family appreciate listening to you every night. Me and my husband listen to you faithfully.
You should, because there's no other reliable, there's no source. Let's say there are other sources that are good. I have a unique approach to looking at the world. Let's put it to you that way.
I agree with you, and I look at it the same way as you do. And I've learned a lot from listening to you.
What's the number one thing you've learned? If you had to say, somebody grabs you and says, okay, what have you learned from that guy? Tell me what you learned. You remember anything?
That liberalism is a mental disorder.
Well, you've learned the most important lesson there is, because many people shake their heads and scratch their heads when they see what liberals do and say, and they don't have an answer for it. They don't understand how to explain it. It's like a puzzle. They can't understand why people who had, let's say, bad faces in high school go on to law school, then become sexual deviants, then go to work for the ACLU, and then they spend their every waking minute trying to find rights for people who would kill them if the individuals who were in Guantanamo were freed and had power. They would kill the deviants who actually are working for their freedom, so no one understands it. Why would the head of the ACLU, a sexual deviant who hates America, why would he spend every waking minute suing to remove crosses from war memorials? Why would he spend every waking minute hating the Christian heterosexual white male so much that he wants to destroy the image of the Christian heterosexual white male? Why would this pervert spend all of his waking time taking the money from rich liberals out of New York, psychopaths in New York who are descendants of the Holocaust, many of them, giving money to this idiot? And he spends their money getting rights for people in Guantanamo who would kill them. The answer is liberalism is a mental disorder. There's no other answer for it. I finally figured out I broke the code. It's like having a safe, a huge safe in the sky with a phenomenally complicated, a combination on a dial of a safe. It's like 500 different numbers. Finally, after many years of turning a dial, I broke the code. And the safe popped open and God spoke to me and he said, Michael, the answer is because liberalism is a mental disorder. Tell it to the people. There's your answer. Most of them first. If you did an analysis of Prozac-like compounds and who's on them, and you broke it down demographically, political or conservative, my intuitive guess is, and I'm a trained epidemiologist, I'm taking a stab in the dark. I can't do such a study. I don't have the time. I would say that there's no question in my mind that the results would be highly skewed towards liberals. Most of the users of those substances are liberals, and most conservatives would resist such medication. You understand what I'm saying to you with the danger we're in? When you have a brainwashed nation that's largely drugged, I mean, which way do you turn?
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
You know, I realized the old York Times, I couldn't sleep last night. I went to sleep 8:30 at night, got up 2 in the morning, and laid in bed until about 3 when I heard the newspaper thwop on the driveway. And I said, my God, what a high-carbon thing this is, newspaper delivery. This is really high-carbon. That paper comes to me. Think about it. There's some poor immigrant gets up probably at midnight, picks up this stack of dead trees and printer's ink, drives around spewing carbon from his old, you know, leftover, you know, like a Toyota, whatever, poor guy, poor woman, and drives around with this heavy piece of newspaper, throws it on my driveway. I said, what would Pinchy Sulzberger do if someone pointed out that just delivering newspapers is a high-carbon experience? In fact, most of the stories about the myth of global warming are put out by these newspapers, these comic books for stupid adults. And they're delivered in the most high-carbon fashion imaginable. See, most of the people who read the internet have read competing theories on what's causing this slight uptick in global temperature. And I say slight uptick, like maybe a half a degree a century. I'm a boater, for God's sakes. The tide charts were written a long time ago. They're accurate, down to the inch. There's been no rise in sea level anywhere. I keep calendar year after calendars, year after year. It's about the same temperature year after year, the same thing, over and over again. But if you look at the data, there's been like a half a degree in 100 years. Now, whether man is doing it, whether it's anthropogenic, is the argument. But those who are disseminating the idea that the world is about to come to an end because of global warming are mainly those who write for newspapers. And those who read it are generally people with lower intelligences who simply read newspapers. But what they don't realize is that the vehicle that is delivering the news to them about so-called global warming is really a very high carbon delivery system. I thought about that 3 in the morning. I had to entertain myself somehow to keep from climbing the walls altogether. Now, maybe that's the sign of intelligence. Do you know that I dream in not only 3D, but Technicolor? If I could tell you the number of dreams I have every night, and I remember all of them in detail, I actually painted paintings last night. In my sleep, I painted masterpieces where I saw the brush, I saw the paint, I saw the bubbles of the paint. I couldn't believe this. I actually look forward to going to sleep every night because my dreams are far more interesting than my life. I have the most phenomenally interesting dreams, more interesting than any movies I've ever seen. And the older I get, the more interesting my dreams become. I'm starting to wonder if, you know, that's not the other world. The next world is over there. Wow. Interesting world. So anyway, to make a long story short, the high-carbon newspaper comes on the driveway. And I got it this morning, and I put two yellow tags on the old York Times. One is, Turk lawmakers. They're so PC, the Times. Not Turkey, not Turkish, but Turk lawmakers. They always look up the right way to say things to not be offensive. That they're experts on. Their IQ is very high on non-offense. Turk lawmakers grant authority for raids in Iraq. Why Turk? Well, because some of the lawmakers may not be Turkish. They could be Kurdish. You see? See how smart they are, the boys from NYU? You see how smart, how they use their intelligence? But they don't tell you it was Nancy Pelosi who forced the Turkish parliament, or shall I say the Turk parliament, both old and young Turks, to vote to invade northern Iraq to confront Kurdish rebels. It was Nancy Pelosi and her Democrats who actually provoked this. That they don't tell you. Next article that I noted was, this is a shocker. A shocker. U.S. concerned as Iraq awards power deals to Iran and China. I almost fell over when I read this. Those backstabbing SOBs in Iraq, they're the most miserable people on earth are the Iraqis. They are the most backstabbing group of SOBs on the entire planet. These rats, we've spent, what, trillions of dollars liberating them from Saddam, and now when they have a little oil flowing and they have money, they're going to award the construction of power plants to Iran and China? Those backstabbing vermin. I wouldn't let them do it. But why should we permit them to do it? What, are you kidding me? What kind of government do we have? They take our money to liberate those ingrates in filthy nightshirts who continue to kill each other's women and children outside mosques. And then to add insult to injury, when they're about to build power plants, they award it to Iran and China, the construction contracts. This never would have happened in World War II. After Germany was devastated and during Reconstruction, I doubt very much that contracts would have been awarded to anyone other than General Electric, General Motors, etc. Since our nation had been depleted in fighting World War II, you would figure that perhaps we want to refill the coffers in some manner. But this, again, is an example of the lack of leadership in the administration. I have to tell you that. Who else do you blame for this? How could you blame anyone but George Bush for this? How could you blame anybody but Bush for this? U.S. concerned as Iraq awards power deals to Iran and China, how could they do this? How could you permit Iranians to come and build power plants in Iraq? How could you do this unless you're an absolute idiot and totally out of control? So then that's at 3 in the morning. You see what bothers me? No wonder I sleep so much. You wake up to this kind of news, it's no wonder that I dream in Technicolor. Putin attacks U.S. foreign policy, announces new nuclear weapon. This is getting ugly. This is getting ugly. He says that they're building a new nuclear submarine, Russia. You hear this? And he said we have grandiose plans and they are absolutely realistic. And he said we are going to develop a new generation nuclear weapon that will stun the world. We haven't heard anything from the Federation of Concerned Atomic Scientists. They're suddenly silent when their good friend in Russia is talking about building a new generation of nuclear weapons. They only have big yaps on them when it comes to the American military having a nuclear weapon. But if Russia, oh, they're entitled to it. Federation of Concerned Scientists, all fellow traveler communist wobblies, all of them, all raised in Brooklyn, Bronx, Manhattan, over oil cloth by ILGWU parents who taught them to hate the country and to spit on the ground every time they left the apartment, in my opinion. How come they have nothing to say about Putin saying he's going to develop a new generation of nuclear weapon? How can he say, when he said that Russia will build another nuclear submarine, we didn't hear any of these anti-nuke lefties go crazy in America. He says that they're also planning a completely new atomic weapon. How come they didn't get excited over that and say that it's 1 minute to midnight? Those morons. Commies, that's what they are, 100%. But do we need a nationalistic government? Wow, I don't see how we're going to survive. Anyways, I made one new point that you never heard before. Newspapers are high-carbon deliveries, which is very funny, actually, when you think about it. You could now throw this in the face of your newspaper-reading friends.
You're listening to an encore broadcast Savage. Of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
James Watson, a Nobel Prize winner for his part in the unraveling of DNA, who now runs one of America's leading scientific research institutions, drew widespread condemnation for comments he made ahead of his arrival in Britain for a speaking tour, including the Science Museum in London. The 79-year-old geneticist reopened the explosive debate about race and science in a newspaper interview, in which he said Western policies towards African countries were wrongly based on an assumption that black people were as clever as their white counterparts, when testing suggested the contrary. He claimed genes responsible for creating differences in human intelligence could be found within a decade. Now, what has happened as a result of this is the newly formed Equality and Human Rights Commission. Equality. Now, we mean forced equality. You understand what that is, don't you? Said it was studying Dr. Watson's remarks in full. Dr. Watson told the Sunday Times that he was inherently gloomy about the prospect of Africa because, quote, all our social policies are based on the fact that their intelligence is the same as ours, whereas all the testing says not really. He said there was a natural desire that all human beings should be equal, but, quote, people who have to deal with black employees find this is not true. Close quote. Again, that's him. He has a book published next week in which he writes, there is no firm reason to anticipate that the intellectual capacities of peoples geographically separated in their evolution should prove to have evolved identically. Our wanting to reserve equal powers of reason as some universal heritage of humanity will not be enough to make it so, close quote. Now, he has arrived in Britain on a speaking tour to publicize his latest book, Avoid Boring People, Lessons from a Life in Science. So there it is. There it is. American scientist, as you well know, was working in the University of Cambridge in the 1950s. He formed part of the team which discovered the structure of DNA. He shared the 1962 Nobel Prize for Medicine with his British colleague, Francis Crick, and New Zealand-born Maurice Wilkins. This is when the Nobel Prize was sort of apolitical. Apolitical. There it is. You want to talk about that? Go ahead and talk about it. 1-800-449-8255. Truthfully, the big story for me is not Watson's statements, although it's an interesting theory that he proposes. It's where are the staph infections coming from? So I thought that I would use my training in epidemiology. I am a PhD, earned PhD in epidemiology and human nutrition from the University of California at Berkeley in 1978. Thank you. So if you don't mind, I'm going to read you a paragraph I posted on michaelsavage.com. And it's quite simple, not stupid, but simple, and elegant, and concise, which is the mark of intelligent writing. When you see pages and pages, you know the person doesn't know what they're talking about. When you see a pretty elegant, short statement, you can analyze it and test it for its truth. In fact, the mark of science, of scientific statement, is can it be tested and proven, can it be potentially proven wrong? That's the test of a scientific statement. Can it be potentially proven wrong? Okay? So I ask the question, where are the staph infections coming from? Here is my theory. We are told this is a new strain of staph, but the good doctors are either ignorant of epidemiology or afraid to tell you the truth. Let us reason together. New drug-resistant strains of bacteria are appearing in our hospitals over the past 10 years. Some are the result of overuse of antibiotics, but others are being brought into emergency rooms by the millions of illegal aliens who use our hospitals for primary care. Doctors, nurses, and others then spread these germs throughout the hospital. And of course, when illegals visit their relatives in the wards, they also spread the gift that keeps on giving, drug-resistant staph infections. This is my own theory. I have an earned PhD in epidemiology and human nutrition from the University of California at Berkeley, 1978, signed Michael Savage. Now, what you have to do is test the theory. It won't be tested for one reason. You can't get funding to test such a theory. Because to get such funding, you have to go to the very same people who are claiming to be ignorant of the cause of these drug-resistant staph infections. Therefore, we're living in medieval times all over again. The West is so paralyzed that we're moving backwards in terms of science rather than forwards. We have a soundbite from one of the CDC mean-faced, clipped-haired women who now run the entire agency, who tell us nothing that we need to know about staph infections other than wash your hands. I couldn't believe it. I am listening to trained doctors saying that the best thing you could do is wash your hands. It's like we've evolved back to the 17th century. We're in the pre-Lister phase of medicine in the United States of America because the doctors either don't know any better or they're politically hampered in what they know to be true and can't say it. You understand what I'm saying to you? These organisms are endemic in Mexico, which is a filthy country. Mexico is a filthy toilet bowl of a nation, which is why every time Americans go there and eat a salad, they come back with turista. You want me to be blunt with you? I'll be blunt with you. It's a show for adults. I don't have to put roses around my words. That is why even liberals from the Upper East Side of New York who love and embrace diversity get turista when they go to Mexico. You see, bacteria do not discriminate. They don't say, well, she's a good liberal from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I'm not going to infect her bowel. I will only give it to the evil conservative. See, the bacteria is quite democratic when you think about it, as are the viruses that the immigrants are bringing in. And they do affect liberals as well, even those in Austin, Texas, San Francisco, and the Upper East Side of New York, by the way. So there it is. There's the story. Let's take a caller or two right now in the Savage Nation. Mark, Los Angeles, 8:30 on the dial. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
What I want to know, Mike, is did the methodology that you used in your study of plant life and organisms, and i.e. your breaking down of looking at the parts to understand the whole and the organization of those areas, is that what led to your thinking that you used in looking at the political landscape, or was it the other way around?
That's a great question. Which came first, the politics or the egg? I don't have an answer to that. I do know that I've always been curious as to how things worked. In fact, I'm having memories as I get older of my childhood, and I remember taking things apart. Sometimes I couldn't put them back together again, and I get yelled at. I always took watches apart, toy train. I took all my toys apart and couldn't put them together sometimes because I knew how to take them apart. I was very careful in unscrewing them, but I couldn't remember where all the parts went. So I always had a desire to get to the bottom of things. I would say, though, that deductive and inductive reasoning, that is Aristotelian logic, as I was forced to learn in my early years of scientific reasoning, does have a great role to play in political analysis, and the conclusions are strictly my own. However, if I come to a conclusion in a political discussion, I don't know that you can potentially disprove what I said in a scientific experiment. Whereas, as I said to you earlier, I once asked a professor of mine, what is a scientific statement? And he said a scientific statement is a statement that can be potentially disproven, meaning you can put it forward as a theory and as a theorem. You develop experiments to prove it, disprove it. You see what I'm saying? And find out whether it's true or false. The problem is, in politics, it's almost impossible to construct an experiment to prove or disprove a theory. So if I propose the theory based upon evidence that I've seen that liberalism is a mental disorder, beginning with what's happened to the Centers for Disease Control, beginning with the fact that we have outbreaks of diseases that were once wiped out in the United States of America, and I tell you it's related to the large influx, millions of illegal aliens, it makes common sense to me that it's a theory worth testing. However, in order to do such a grand experiment, you need money to test it, to do such an epidemiological study. And the government controls the purse strings to such a study. The CDC is the most politicized branch of the U.S. government. It's owned mainly by the AIDS racketeers. And there's not a chance in Hades of getting a dime for that kind of study. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but I've tried the best I can. Now, I hope I don't take apart too many questions today without putting them back together again. But Humpty will be right back, right here on the Savage Nation.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I have a book at home that I just got from the PBS series called The War, about World War II. It's got the most astonishing pictures I've ever seen, including posters from World War II. And one section shows color posters of U.S. bonds. You know, buy a bond for the war, and you bought war bonds and helped contribute to the war effort. And a series of those bonds, in the series, one of them said, "Freedom of speech, what we fight for." I was stunned that our own Congress doesn't even understand that they're becoming more like the Soviet Union, as people like that monster witch, Dianne Feinstein, says that she wants to ban Michael Savage and others from talk radio. These monstrous billionaire left-wingers, these Leninists, are exactly like the fascists that this country fought against in World War II, those who would ban speech they find offensive or difficult to deal with. That's what the people died for in World War II, was to prevent Dianne Feinstein from imposing a fascist dictatorship in America. Do you understand that? We're getting back to the main question of IQ. What is intelligence? It's a great question. It's been defined and redefined and redefined and defined and redefined, and it's an interesting question. Mark in Akron, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
I was wondering, Dr. Savage, if you could give us a definition for the layman of what intelligence is and how that relates to intelligence and versus knowledge.
It's a great question. I do not have the answer. All I can do is lead the discussion, Mark. Because when I was a kid, I was led to believe those who got better grades were more intelligent than I. It turned out they weren't. I was led to believe that those who did good on tests were intelligent. It was not necessarily true. I was led to believe that those who could memorize large books were intelligent. It's not necessarily true. I, for one, was not a good memorizer. I was not even a good student. I'm in very good company, though. I mean, there are many other people who've achieved a lot of great things in life, actually, or significant things in life, who are not very good students. So it leads us back to the question, really, of what is intelligence, Mark? How do you gauge intelligence in others?
Their ability to communicate is important to me. Their ability to formulate their thoughts and ideas, not necessarily their knowledge of a subject, but their ability to think things through and come to what seem like logical conclusions.
All right, so you're saying that you admire reason in a person. And, you know, reason is a diminishing quantity in our society. We have feelings and we have thoughts and we have ideas. We have very little reason, particularly in the media. When have you last heard anyone in the media say, let us reason together?
Practically never.
Practically never. They give you pre-digested chunks of ideas, and you're supposed to react to it and agree with them or not agree with them. I try it some, like I said, let us reason together on the staphylococcus infection. I don't hear anyone at the CDC saying, let's reason together. Have you?
No, I haven't.
No. So, well, you know, it's like Watson's controversial statement about Africans. You could get the Mexican people saying, how dare you even raise the question of immigrants bringing in staphylococcus? That even if it's true, we don't want to hear it, and it should not be allowed to be discussed. Well, you can damn yourself if someone would say that to me. I mean, we may as well dig our own graves and throw ourselves in them if we reach the point where we have every pressure group in the world determining what we can and cannot think. We're finished as a society. Now, let's get back, though, to the question that doesn't agitate me, which is what is intelligence? And I do want to talk about it. So as I said to you, I was not a good test taker. I always struggled in school. I was always sitting at a desk dreaming, and my mind was always somewhere else. I'm easily distracted. Well, I don't know. My mind was elsewhere. Let's put it to you that way. I don't know where. Personal problems on idea. I don't know where they were. I wasn't devising the theory of evolution. But my mind would wander. So I didn't have the ability to sit and memorize. And a lot of the kids who could became doctors or lawyers. I would say some rather prosaic doctors and lawyers. I don't know of any who became particularly brilliant physicians or scientists. Some may have. And I don't know any who have become great legal theorists. They've become lawyers. Good. I couldn't be a lawyer because I couldn't memorize all those books. People said to me, be a lawyer. I told you this before. When I grew up, all the families were man and woman, you know, married and together. And everyone else's mother and father was like your surrogate mother and father as well. You could run to them off that street in the Bronx and go to their apartment if you were hungry or if you were cut or if you needed somebody to console you for something. His mother was as good as your mother, and she would be your mother. For it was beautiful. It was a great, great way. But the fathers were also everyone's father in those neighborhoods in those days. Kids were not alone. They were never alone. There was always someone watching those kids. Believe me, nobody had a chance to go and grab the child inappropriately. They would have taken that guy and thrown him off a roof. They wouldn't have called the ACLU. The men would have grabbed anyone like a pervert in that neighbor. They would have taken him up to the sixth floor and thrown him off the roof. I can guarantee you they would have done that. And the pervs knew that, and they stayed away from those neighborhoods. But to get back to the other point I was going to make. So as we got older, the guys would sit and talk with, I remember one guy's father. I told you, I mentioned him before. I won't mention his name. I hope he's still living. He must be 90 by now. But he was sort of the man's man of the men. He was different than all the other men. All the other men were either small shopkeepers like that. He was a club owner when it was unheard of for a man in that milieu to be a club owner. And a very, very strong, it was like a fighter, street fighter, club owner kind of guy. And he was the kind of guy that kids would gravitate to because he was just that kind of guy. You know, I don't have to describe in words what men know what I'm talking about. He was a manly guy who boys looked up to. Let's put it to you that way. They knew he was the toughest man in the block. He didn't have to prove it either. He didn't beat up anyone's father. Everyone just knew it, but looking at him. So anyway, as the talk would turn in that neighborhood, Johnny, what do you want to be? Billy, what do you want to be? Sam, what do you want to be? He came to me, said, you know, Michael, you ought to be a lawyer, they tell me. I said, why? I didn't even know what a lawyer was. They said, because you talk quickly and you can think quickly. I said, oh, great. Well, what's a lawyer do? They said, well, you see all those books? You gotta go, and the next time you're the lawyer. I didn't even know what a lawyer was. You have to read all those books and memorize all. And as I got older, I said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to remember what's in books and then have to use that in a conversation. So I knew I couldn't be a good lawyer because that's not how my mind worked. It doesn't mean lawyers aren't intelligent. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there are different kinds of intelligence is what I'm getting to. And then no, there's a certain development in my acceptance of intelligence. I come from a very parochial world of New York City. People in New York City are very prejudiced and very parochial in their attitudes about intelligence and class and coolness. They all think they're the smartest people on earth because they aren't, generally. You know, they think that their street is the best, their block is the best, that this is the best. But all the years I've been gone from New York, it took me a long while to adjust to a certain understandings. I came to learn in traveling, for example, in the Fiji Islands and sitting many, many hours with black men drinking kava kava, that there's a different realm of intelligence. And I spent many a night sitting and drinking kava kava with black women in straw huts, and I came to understand that there's another dimension of intelligence, that it's all not based upon quickness of mind, quickness of thought, ability to answer questions and answer tests. So you got to understand, my definition of intelligence is much different than you may think. I'm highly educated. I have a bachelor's degree, two master's degrees that are real, including one published as a book, one dissertation published as a book, and the other one published as a book. Make no mistake about it, I have the real McCoy in education. Really good stuff. But I don't gauge other people solely by their education. I have met people without an education who are extremely intelligent. They didn't have the opportunity. They didn't have the father. They didn't have the mother. They didn't have the drive. They didn't have the psychological motivation. Whatever it was, it doesn't mean they have a low IQ. I've met criminals without formal education who are super high IQ people. You've met criminals who have high IQs, high intelligence quotients, but there's something warped in them which gives them the psychological desire to steal or to hurt people along with their intelligence. So, you know, there's something's missing there. Something broke along the way, and there's no defining, you know, how that happened or why. And then when I got to California in the 70s, I also had a wise guy attitude that people were stupid here because they talked slower.
Savage.